One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org. One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
It's all about the macro productions.
What does the goddamn line say, Tony?
Please do not use gendered language.
Then what? I'll be arrested, put in airport jail.
Look, well, you're going completely sideways, man.
It's a big club, and you ain't in it.
How dare you?
Mr. Speaker, the President of the United States.
I'm Chris Hansen with Dave on NBC.
Jack Mary's Tack Theratrix.
Hi, I'm Spartacus.
Steve Jackson, Sacramento, he, him.
Steven Seagal.
Sex offender guy.
I'm Keith Morris.
This is Muammar Gaddafi.
I'm Rick James, bitch.
Sorting through the lies.
The hijacker's passport was found blocks from the World Trade Center crash site, if you can believe that.
We cannot track $2.3 trillion in transactions.
And uncovering the centuries-long plan for world domination.
Learning about Cuba, having some food.
Let's talk about Chinese people.
Have you ever been in a Turkish prison?
I have
a
I have sent six of my Libyan missiles to blow up the Sears hardware department.
Nothing could be more fun than jumping off a cliff to German bisexuals.
Oh, you English are so superior, aren't you?
Thank you, comrade.
And now, macroaggressions.
That's what assholes call it.
With your host.
Buddy, I don't know who you are, but you're about to get chlamydia.
Charlie Robinson.
Hey, Whitey, where's your hat?
You want to drop the blame on Charlie and say it's all Charlie's fault.
He was a retard.
I get some goddamn diuretic.
Welcome to Macroaggressions. I'm your host, Charlie Robinson. If you are watching us on Rockfin or Rumble or you're listening wherever podcasts are served, thanks so much. We appreciate the support. If you haven't rated the show already, we would appreciate it. Give us 5 stars. If you think we've earned it, you can go to macroaggressions.io if you want to connect with me, activistpost.com, naturalblaze.com. We appreciate our sponsors. We cannot do the show without them. We hope that you will check them out. Legal Shield has been in business for 50 years in the U.S. and Canada. It's attorneys in your area for $1 a day. It's $30 a month. It is the best money that you will spend. You can do all kinds of amazing things. When you have access to an attorney, you're going to get an app on your phone, real simple. Contact them, tell them that you need to get some legal documents knocked out right out of the bat, like right immediately first month. You want to do your last will and testament. You want to do your medical directive. You want to do a financial power of attorney. You want to make sure you have all that buttoned up, put it in your safe in a fireproof sleeve somewhere so that you've got it in case you need it. You don't want to be doing this when you're in the middle of a situation. Speaking as somebody who went through something last summer with my mom, that is not the time to get your legal affairs in order. You need to get that done in advance, and nobody wants to spend the money on it. And who can blame you? You don't want to spend $2,000 or $3,000 to hire an attorney to draft documents. It seems ridiculous. Well, you don't have to. That's the nice thing about Legal Shield, is that that's covered in your membership. You can knock that out in the first month. Hell, you can knock it out in the first week if you want to. You just contact the office close to you. On your app, there's a drop-down menu. Tap a couple boxes, tell them the documents that you need, submit. They'll get a call the next day from your attorney that will say, hey, we're right down the street, set you up. You know, what time, what day and time works good for you. This is what we'll need. Bring this in. We'll We'll get all these documents done. It's the smartest thing you can do. It's about being proactive. You want to have that stuff buttoned up. So you can go to the website that they built specifically for this show, www.don'tgetpushedaround.com, and check it out. If you are somebody that runs a small business big enough to need a legal department, but you don't really have one or can't afford one, don't worry. Legal Shield has that. You can just add that on to your a la carte menu. You can just pick that as in addition to your membership. Also, Identity Shield, they have that as well. If you carry a gun, there's documentation for that. There's a lot going on over there. I think that they tell us that we have equal justice under the law, but nobody really believes that, because you know how things work when you have an attorney that is well-versed in the law, not some public defender that's going to forget your name, you know. So you've got help here. If you're getting audited by the IRS for W-2s, you can contact them. If you just need to have somebody take a look at some employment contract that your work sent you this year that they want you to sign, and maybe it includes some sort of language about medical procedures that you agree to have, i.e. shots, you know, maybe you go, I'm not really sure about this. Well, send it over to your attorney. That's what rich people do. They have attorneys that look at over all that stuff before they sign them. So go to don'tgetpushedaround.com and take a look and see what you think, see if it's right for you. Also, since we're talking about being proactive, we got to talk about your health. Christian Yordanov is my certified health practitioner out of Portugal. He's fantastic. You don't need a doctor down the street anymore. Those days are gone. You can do this remotely. I've been working with him for the last couple of years now. I reached out to him when I was turning 50. I really wanted to have kind of a baseline understanding of where I was physically, what my levels were, and in a way that's more in depth than just what your doctor will do. And so he did an organic acids test for me. And that's just one of the tests that's available. So if you're somebody that's dealing with digestive problems, or maybe your energy is low, you've noticed it going, you know, getting low for a little while, not like you used to be, you know, or maybe you're having a hard time sleeping. That's a big problem. These are the types of things that are in Christian's wheelhouse. I mean, this is exactly what he deals with. And you don't have to live like this any longer. There's solutions to it, but you got to get honest, and you got to look under the hood and see what's going on. And Christian can help you with that. So if you want to reclaim your health and your vitality, reach out to him. You can go to livelongerformula.com and just check in with him and tell him that you heard it here at Macroaggressions, and he'll hook you up. And I think that this goes in alignment with what we've been talking about being proactive and not being reactive. Let's take care of your health now while it's not a huge issue, and not have to deal with it a year from now when things get out of control. And on top of that, more expensive. And God knows, if you have to use the American medical system, you're going to have problems there. Or if you're Canadian and you're stuck in their medical system, you know, good luck seeing a doctor. They'll rather you just die. They'll offer you medical assistance and dying. You know what I mean? But you don't have to live like that. There's solutions to it, but you got to get honest with yourself. Is this the year that you take control of your health? If it is, then go to livelongerformula.com. The links are down in the bottom in the show notes. You can check it out and see what you think. Well, without further ado, ladies and gentlemen, let's talk to the great James Corbett. Welcome to the show, the great James Corbett. Welcome back. How are you?
I'm doing pretty well. How are you doing, Charlie?
I'm doing great. It reminded me of the first time I had you on the show was right when I started the show in March of 2020. And the timing was unique. We had a conversation about the concept of medical martial law, something I hadn't really ever thought of before. And it seemed like it was out there in the universe somewhere, a million years away. And yet it played out almost exactly as you described it, without tanks on the corner necessarily, but just a dictate from above. Looking back on the COVID years, what surprised you about that? Was it the compliance of the general public? Was it the bloodthirsty authoritarianism of the state itself, the lies of the media, a combination of all of it? What caught you off guard from that era?
Yeah, good question, and an important one, because I think we are starting to gradually sort of put that back. New news is taking over our minds, and people are starting to already forget the absolute insanity of what we just lived through. So, yes, I think it does deserve a bit of further introspection and treatment. And my line is that I was not surprised at all that they... Well, I will put in this caveat. Having lived through swine flu and Zika and Ebola and scare after scare after scare, the only thing that surprised me is, oh, they are really pulling the trigger on this one. This is the actual one that they're going to pull the trigger on. I was, for the first month or so, January of 2020, I was thinking, oh, they're just hyping it up. It's going to be another Ebola kind of thing or something like that. But no, they pulled the trigger on it. And for me, the moment that I knew, oh, they're really pulling the trigger on this was when they canceled the NBA games. Like, oh, when it starts interfering with sports ball in America, you know, this is serious. So yes. But once that took effect and once they really pulled the trigger on it, none of the actions that they ended up taking was particularly surprising to me in and of itself, because as I had been talking about for years before that point, this is what they've got on the books. This is what they say they are going to do. This is what the infrastructure they've set up. This is the legislative framework they have set up for doing exactly this. So none of that surprised me. The complete, immediate acquiescence of so much of the public to the narrative was, even for jaded, cynical James Corbett, who's been, you know, doing this for a long enough to know that people do tend to swallow the propaganda, but the extent to which people just immediately started adopting everything they were hearing. Suddenly, social distancing. When I started, there was one particular viral video that was making the rounds. It must have been March of 2020. Some guy in his balcony in Brooklyn or wherever, New York, somewhere, literally clapping at someone on the street, go home, social distancing, 2 weeks to flatten the curve, literally shouting at people, and that was going viral, people cheering him on. Yeah, you tell these assholes who are walking around the streets as if they have freedom, you tell them what's what. When I started to see people adopting that was a wake-up call, even for me, because I would have liked to have thought that people would, at the very least, take a little bit of time to adopt that level of conditioning, but they jumped straight into that boiling pot.
Yeah, I saw a video of somebody, they were sitting outside on a patio, looked like they were all having lunch or something, it was during the day, and a guy had a hat on with all of these long pool noodles attached to it going out in different directions that were roughly, I don't know, they weren't quite 6 feet, but close enough, and it was setting up a perimeter so that anybody that got near him would have to go around the pool, and I just thought, boy, I mean, that's America for you. Like, we're so creative and yet such slaves at the same time. To do something like that seemed inconceivable, and yet here we were. And not only, the thing that really threw me for a loop was not that they were necessarily doing it, but they were doing it to thunderous applause by the general public, and people were watching that and they're going, that's how you gotta do it. You gotta really social distance. And then, of course, in the years following, we get to the truth of it. Where was the science behind social distancing? They're like, well, you know, we just kind of made it up. And I didn't, I wasn't entirely surprised, but maybe disappointed. Were you disappointed in humanity's inability to stand up for themselves?
Of course, there's no other way to put that. Yeah, why was I shocked? Because I would have liked to have thought that people would at the very least have required a bit of pushing, cajoling, conditioning to being beaten down and beaten over the head with propaganda before they adopted it. Clearly they did not. And I mean, there's a lot of things that happened in the past several years, one of which is a massive public-wide global psychological experiment that has just been run on conditioning and getting the public to jump through hoops and how to manipulate public into certain behaviors. I have no doubt that many, many a behavioral analyst will get many, many, many years of study from what we've just witnessed over the past few years.
It was Dr. James Milgram on steroids. You know, it was the Stanford prison study. When you see the guy yelling from his balcony at somebody else, you know, that person clearly embodied the role of the the prison guard. It didn't take much. That, I think, was the most surprising component to me, was how little it took to get people to become authoritarians, to call the police on their neighbors. Yeah. There's too many cars in the driveway over Thanksgiving, right, and maybe you just, you know, they might have
correction for the record from the fact checkers. Stanford Prison Experiment was Zimbardo, I believe.
Oh, Zimbardo.
The Milgram Experiment was the fake electric shock.
I get my psychological conditioning experiments confused.
Although they do kind of go together, so yeah
fair enough. Yeah, exactly. It feels like, and of course, it feels like we're living through another one, or we're always sort of living through some sort of psychological experiment now, where we're starting to see things like, you know, everyone's an economist now, all of a sudden. Mm. Everybody's an expert on tariffs. I am not an expert on tariffs. But your home country and my current country seem to have some sort of beef about tariffs. What do we make of this? Because if I recall correctly, didn't we here in the United States back a long, long time ago, before we were the United States, go to war about tariffs and taxes and things like that? And now all of a sudden it's fine. Help me understand where I'm going wrong with understanding tariffs.
Yeah, well, it's hard not to see at least the threat of tariffs and punitive tariff measures as a prelude to war, specifically because that was what the 1930s, a lot of the 1930s were about, the various tariffs that were going up around the world. And what is the old phrase? I'm going to need to recommit this to memory because it seems particularly relevant, but something about, you know, where goods cannot enter, soldiers will, or something like that. Mm. To truly go ahead with this and to actually start trade wars really is the prelude to warfare generally, in this day and age. And I think, who knows, right? There's a lot of things that are up in the air at the moment, so I'm not going to come down on this one way or another without seeing what eventuates in reality. So far, what it seems to have been is this is the opening negotiating position for getting certain concessions out of various countries, yeah. And it's not actually it has yet to actually be used as an actual tariff yet. It's all, oh no, they backed down and they gave us this, so now, you know, we'll delay the measures. But we'll see.
Is that the worst tactic? Because it seems to be kind of working so far.
Yeah, like it certainly is working. Now, the most interesting take that I have read on this so far, it was posted up on Zero Hedge, I believe, by Tyler Durden. I'll have to look it up again. I forget whether it was a Durden article or someone else attributed to it. But it was making the point that this is, to some extent, a concession of the end of the American Empire. Because the post-World War II world order that we've been hearing so much about was predicated on the idea of clearly American superpower dominance, but wielded in such a way that it creates a system that at the very least, I mean, not everyone's going to be super happy with, but at the very least they have a place within that system. But this seems to be a recognition of the fact that that post-World War II order is done. And now it is time for everyone to beat their chest, go as hard as they can, every man for himself kind of system, which at first, no doubt, because we've been used to 80 years of unquestioned superpower dominance of the United States will get its way every single time, until there starts to be actual resistance against that. At the very, very least, this completely eradicates the so-called soft power that we've heard about for many, many decades, generations, my entire life. I've heard about the American soft power, which has been wielded essentially with that promise. Yes, America is the big brother and they sort of steward over the system, but you'll benefit from this. When the mask comes off and it's like, nope, you don't benefit, this is all for us, we're getting as much as we can from this deal, obviously people will start, I mean, just as a natural human reaction, people will start saying, okay, if it's every man for himself, then, and if everything's a negotiation and a deal, then we're going to go for ourselves as well. And that whole concept of the multilateral world order starts to, well, it has fallen apart, I think. I think this is what this is. It's a concession of that. Now, what this does, really, is give a gigantic shot in the arm to the whole BRICS resistance narrative, because now, suddenly, I mean, Canada, Mexico, all these other, of course, they're U.S. allies. I mean, there's no way they can't be, are now suddenly going, oh, we're not allies. Okay, so who else is in the same boat? Hey, look at this BRICS thing and what they're doing. Yeah. And this gives that sort of that new world order a gigantic shot in the arm. And suddenly people who would never have even considered the possibility of joining with such a resistance bloc, now it makes a certain amount of sense. So I'm let's put it this way. I think it would be very easy to simply poo-poo what's going on and say it's all smoke and mirrors and nothing's changing. It would also be easy to say that this is all, of course, this is all some grand plot to create the New World Order. But in reality, I think this goes back to an editorial I wrote several years ago called Chaos Out of Order, in which I was making the point that, you know, the old Ordo Ab Chao motto of the Freemasons and the New World Order generally, which is sort of the way that false flags and other things function. You create these spectacular, chaotic events like COVID or whatever else, get people freaking out, and then you come in and present the order. Well, what if you wanted to completely and totally and utterly transform the entire global world order as it exists? You would need to create chaos on a level that we have never seen, on a completely unprecedented level. Now, of course, a World War III scenario and a nuke, false flag, or whatever could, of course, do that kind of trick. But a gigantic, hey, here's this bull in a china shop who's just come in and is changing the entire world order by executive fiat is potentially fitting that bill. So the thing that I said in that editorial is, to some extent, this is what people who are opposed to the system that has existed for the past 75 years, this is what we want. We want the liquefaction of the system that has been cemented into place for all this time, and that's just been this rigged game that we know has been doing all of this evil and destruction around the world. In the liquefaction of all of the rules, when suddenly it's this chaotic swirl of events, if we understand what is going on, if we reclaim our power as the people who really, through our labor, our blood, our sweat, our tears, is what all of this economic hocus pocus is predicated on. If we reclaim our power and know what we are doing, we can take advantage of this chaotic time to create our order, by which I mean a spontaneous order of voluntary, peaceful human relations. But very, very soon, these chaotic events will be cemented back into a new form, and probably, if the they, them, those get their way, not in a form that we would want.
It reminds me of something I heard last year, where AMLO was having a conversation with Antony Blinken, and he was in front of a microphone. I guess they'd had a conversation earlier, and this was maybe the day after, and AMLO says, yeah, well, he was down here. We were talking about a shared constitution, and people went, what are you talking about? My mind immediately went to Aaron Russo, you know, freedom of fascism, you know, for the North American Union, right? And so you start to hear Greenland and you go, that's weird. Why are we hearing this all of a sudden? And we did hear it a while ago because I remember seeing the meme of Greenland with the Trump Tower there. And it was a big joke and it was kind of funny and everyone thought nothing of it. But between hearing these guys at Trilateral, Antony Blinken, talking about a shared constitution with the president of former president of Mexico, and this talk about Trump wanting to make Canada the 51st state, whether he's serious or not, whether this is negotiations and trade, whether he's just trolling, I'm not sure. But boy, I get a really bad feeling when these guys are having private conversations about a shared constitution. What did you make of this situation?
Once again, more so than the political aspect of this and whatever the politicians are jawboning amongst themselves, which again, I think kind of business as usual on that front. The interesting part to me is, again, the way the public reacts to this, because I'm like you. I remember 20 years ago, freedom to fascism and things like that were bread and butter issues of the conspiracy reality movement that existed at that time in the early 2000s that was flowering on the internet and that was part of what swept me along and made me into who I am. Yeah. I remember North American Union, the Amero, all of these things, the SPP, the Security and Prosperity Partnership. For those who don't remember, look into that, where there was this entire trilateral American, Mexican, Canadian negotiation that was going on to harmonize borders and flow of goods and bring down economic barriers and create the NAFTA superhighway and all of these things that, again, you saw the conspiracy realists railing against, and, you know, Alex Jones and everyone else. Even some mainstream figures were talking about this. And we saw the dramatic events in Montebello, Quebec, which was where they were holding an SPP meeting, and Prime Minister Stephen Harper at that time had said, oh, you know, people think we're building an intracontinental highway or a highway to Mars or something like that. Ha ha ha. But what we're really doing is regulating the contents of jelly beans or something like that. He gave a dismissive remark. Anyway, so they're having this secretive behind closed doors SPP meeting in Montebello. There's a huge protest outside. Part of what develops from that is some Sûreté du Québec, the provincial police there, are undercover, and they get exposed as undercover agents that were provocateurs walking up to the police line with rocks in their hands trying to start something so that the police could crack down on it. Again, bread and butter issues of conspiracy reality movement that existed two decades ago. People were railing against the North American Union. This is globalism, man. This is what we're against. Fast forward two decades, some of those very same people are now, yay, rah, rah, Trump is going to, yeah, bring in the Canada, 51st state, ha, ha, take that, Canadians. It's mind-boggling, again, that people can be so easily manipulated into doing precisely what they expressed that they were against, even just a decade or two ago, but Who has memory for that? I mean, we're the TikTok generation now. It's 15 seconds. If it was more than 15 seconds ago, I don't remember what happened. So that, to me, is the surprising part of this. I am not expecting Canada will be the 51st state anytime soon. But I think the fact that it is being put on the table and presented as and drilled into the public consciousness, and that people are actually taking this seriously and thinking about it, and some of these people are even on board with the idea, speaks to the absolute topsy-turvy times that we're living through. And again, the manipulable, malleable consciousness of so many people out there.
What's the play with Greenland? Is it resources? Is it control of the Arctic? Is it the new Louisiana Purchase? Like, what is the thought process behind that?
All of the above? I'm not going to claim to understand the what is specifically is the issue, if there is a singular one, but certainly resources, yep, that seems like a good ploy. And of course, Arctic is heating up, ha ha ha, and is becoming a more of a contested space that NATO and others are more interested in. So that certainly is potentially part of the pie. I can certainly speak more to the Canadian part of this, because as even a sitting Canadian member of parliament posted up recently to Substack, she had an entire article that went through the specifics of specifically Canada joining into a North American Union with the United States. And she went back and had the receipts and cited the specific issues of the Technocrat magazine from the 1930s that was talking specifically about the creation of the North American Technate, because people might not remember or might not know that the part of the point of technocracy, as in Technocracy Inc., as in the actual existing real 1930s political movement that was a thing for a while anyway, part of that was the creation of the eradication of government as we know it, and the creation of a technate, which would be regional governance bodies that were stewarded over by engineers and scientists and people who know better. And part of that would be the North American Technate. No Canada, no America, no Mexico. No, it would be a continental body. And that was an important part of their plank of what they were doing. And again, fast forward a century, and now people are rah-rah-rahing for it.
Oh, that would never happen. Let's talk about AI.
Well, maybe the AI will govern the Technate if we're lucky. Woof.
Oh, yeah. Well, we've got, unfortunately, I don't get warm and fuzzy feelings when I see guys like Sam Altman. I'm pretty sure that in the Terminator 2 movies, they come back to kill him. If I'm being honest with you know, with myself.
Wait, you don't want to look into the orb to get your free world coin? Come on.
No, I think I'm good. Thank you very much. I'll keep my eyeballs. I mean, that's my eyeball scans are just for the TSA. You know, I have standards there you go. Here. Yeah. What do you make of this technocratic insertion into the Trump administration? I've got obviously some bad feelings about the likes of Peter Thiel and Joe Lonsdale and PayPal Mafia and and anybody connected, all of them, you know, Musk. Yeah, Musk, of course. Yeah. What's the sales pitch? Is this, we're so bad at governing. Look at the last batch of horrible politicians. If only we had somebody that was better at doing this, maybe we could program the computers to be fair and balanced and run the system. But we're going to have your approval to do it. How does the technocracy, or what is it about the technocracy that troubles you the most?
What doesn't trouble me about it? But I think the point of technocracy is that it essentially, like so many other governance paradigms, is sort of a fig leaf that is presented at one level for people to get on board with, but is being puppeteered by forces that are above it. So I would say, I would put this in the context of something like, I think the 19th century version of this was eugenics. I think the idea of the consolidation of this ruling ideology, where we rule because we are literally genetically superior to you, even though they didn't even have the understanding of genes at the time that Galton was first working on formulating his eugenics hypothesis, the protoplasm, or whatever they referred to it, you know, that ineffable whatever it is that makes you into who you are. Clearly, rich and powerful people are rich and powerful because they have better protoplasm, and you're a thief and a criminal and a lowlife because you have worse protoplasm. So, of course, what do? We get rid of all the lower class and, the rich people will benefit forever. And really all that was just a reformulation of age-old idea of, you know, kings and emperors as literal gods on earth, or at least appointed by God to lead over other people. We don't believe in that stuff anymore. It's post-Enlightenment. So now we need this protoplasm idea. That'll do it. That morphs in the 20th century into climate change and overpopulation concerns, because, again, depopulation has been an incredibly important part of this ruling ideology. For as long as they need the workers in the factories, then, of course, we can populate the slums with these, you know, dispensable worker bees and grow them up in the Prussian education system that we've adopted that will fashion them into the types of workers that they need to be. But at the moment where we decide we don't need them anymore, automation has reached a certain level, it's time for the depopulation to come in. So, of course, in the 20th century, they take over the environmental movement. In some ways, they even start the environmental movement as we know it. Look into the formation of the World Wildlife Federation. It is the British Eugenic Society by another name, essentially. Look into the formulation of the Population Council in the United States, literally taking over the offices of the American Eugenic Society. Eugenics, we can't talk about that anymore after World War II. Now it's overpopulation, and we have to get on board that train. And I think technocracy is the 21st century reformulation of that ideology. There are technocrats, scientists, engineers, experts who know what's best for you, who will be able to govern your life and tell you what to do. And who gets to appoint these experts? Who's the one pulling the strings and actually funding these bodies into existence? Oh, don't look at that. Just trust the experts. And that's why trust the science has been the rallying cry for a good section of the population over the past few years, because that is fundamentally what technocracy is about. Trust the science, guys. These are experts. They will tell you how to live. So I would say that if you are bothered at all by what you saw during this scamdemic, then by definition, you should be opposed to technocracy, because that is technocracy. That was the test run of what a technocratic system looks like. The experts will tell you what to do, will govern every part of your life, from whether or not you can go outside into the fresh air. They will tell you when it is safe for you to do so. And so if you have any qualms with that, then you are opposed to technocracy, whether you know it or not. And I suspect that people, when it's presented in stark terms like that, people will be able to understand it. But of course, it's always couched behind several layers of propaganda and trusting authority and other such things. So what we need to fundamentally, truly combat this ideology is a truly opposite ideology, not one about trusting the experts who don't just listen to authority, you don't have any say over your own life. We have to develop and further an ideology that is opposed to that. And there are the beginnings of formulations of that that have been put forward by Hayek and others talking about the concept of spontaneous order, and that the best, and this is a thousands of years old concept that has been talked about, you know, Lao Tzu and others in ancient China have talked about this. The best way to govern is not to govern at all. People will form their own relations, and in those relations that are formed spontaneously and naturally, you will find the most sturdy, the most dependable forms of institutions will come together when people are left alone to do it themselves in the exact same way. And I know people cannot believe that. No, there has to be someone in charge telling people what to do. Otherwise, it'll be chaos. Just as the government has to sit there and has to legally force you to speak English, because otherwise, how could we speak English? How could we possibly learn a language unless the government was sitting there literally throwing you in jail if you didn't speak English? No, you learn English because you want to communicate with other people, and so you form a common language, and you use that language. The same, we could look at that in the business world about computer operating systems and other things. Well, it's better if these things are compatible, if there is some sort of standard, so it comes together not because of force of law, but because people realize that cooperating and working together makes things better. Again, we need a fundamentally opposed ideology to technocracy, because the default mindset that people have these days is we need daddy government to come along and tell us what to do, and we need mommy government to come along and make us feel better when daddy government gets a bit too abusive. And as long as we're caught in that, unfortunately, horrifically abusive mindset, as long as we're caught in that, then we're heading towards technocracy, and it's going to happen unless we oppose it.
The part of that concept that I have the hardest time understanding or envisioning is the part about if they'll just leave us alone. They never want to leave us alone. They always want to control us. And this, we've never lived in a planet where it's laissez-faire, you know, let you do what you need to do. It's always top-down control. Fear-based, control by the police, control by laws, control by your schools or your churches, or somebody's always telling you what to do and how to think and why to think it, and the idea, and I can understand people who say, boy, that system sounds great, but like, how would you implement it? Because it's hard to theorize a society in which that wasn't happening, because we've just never experienced it. But once I think you get a taste of a little bit of freedom, it should be contagious. One of the things I wanted to mention, you talked about the eugenics component, which is an underlying theme of all of this. Whenever they're talking about world government or world governance, it's just right below the surface. It's this world government would work so much better if it wasn't for all these people. You know, if we could just get rid of all these people, that would... And the rebranding, the Sir Julian Huxley rebranding of the British Eugenics Society and the term eugenics as transhumanism was brilliant, actually, because it really sort of made it sound like this is a futuristic endeavor. Like, you don't want to be left behind. We're charting a course forward into the future. This new era of we're not just human, we're transhuman. And you go, oh, well, that does sound kind of cool. I mean, the Jetsons and all, and you know, maybe I'll get a briefcase that turns into a spaceship and that'll be cool. But then you go, well, wait, what is the real meaning of transhumanism? When you hear the World Economic Forum going on and on about the fourth industrial revolution, the blending of man with machine into what is known as transhumanism, and you go, again, if it's a robot arm for a guy who lost it in a car accident, fine. I'm on, you know, I get that. But it's really just the rebranding of eugenics, is it not?
It absolutely is. And again, people who don't know the actual historical context of what you're talking about should look this up. Yes, the term transhumanism was coined by Sir Julian Huxley, of course, brother of the famous Aldous Huxley, part of the bizarre, inbred, incestuous Darwin-Wedgwood-Huxley mishmash that, by the way, was essentially the British Eugenics Society for, you know, decades and decades. It was always someone who was some sort of relation to Charles Darwin was the director of the British Eugenics Society. Anyway, of course, the Huxley brothers were the grandsons of T.H. Huxley, who was Darwin's bulldog back in the 19th century. So anyway, a lot of history there. But yes, specifically Julian Huxley writing, I always forget this, new bottles for old wine. Old wine for new, old bottles for new wine, you know, whatever, one of those terms, in which he coined the term transhumanism and talked about this. And it was important to him because, specifically, again, when people follow the thread, they will find that the founding document of UNESCO, who even thinks about UNESCO anymore, but the founding document of UNESCO, first executive director was, of course, Julian Huxley, he wrote the founding document of that, in which he said that the purpose of UNESCO should be to make the unthinkable eugenics thinkable again in a political context. So he was actively looking for ways to reformulate this idea, and this speaks to the idea of crypto eugenics, which was a stated policy of, I believe it came from the American Eugenics Society, that term. Anyway, I have the details of this up on my site for people who are interested. But crypto eugenics, i.e. eugenics by another name. We can't use the word eugenics anymore. It's a bit tainted. So we will just continue it in other ways. Transhumanism was definitely one of those operations. The worst part is that I think, unfortunately, even a lot of people, even in my own audience, who may hear about these things and hear about the Huxleys and people like that and realize, oh, you know, I'm not on board with them, I think they are still prone towards the eugenics mindset. I think there is still a lot of people who still truly believe, yep, some people are just better people and deserve to be propagated forward, and they deserve to, they should pass on their genes, and we should get rid of those types of people. Unfortunately, I think that is just a scratch below the surface, and it wouldn't take much to draw that out of people. And for those people, well, I think that's absolutely morally disgusting, and I truly reject it from the core of my being on moral grounds. But let's just go for the absolute baseline, what do I get out of it? What's in it for me? Newsflash to anyone who thinks they're part of the superior genetic race that's definitely going to populate this new world order, you're not. If you're listening to a conversation like this and you're not, say, a trillionaire or a billionaire who's, you know, literally minting money at your private bank, chances are you're not part of the elite that these elitists are talking about. You're the stupid cannon fodder that will be their enforcers, their thugs, to bring in their New World Order state, and then, boop, you will be dispensed with as needed because you are not part of this elite order that they're talking about. They're not talking about you and your genes. Let's just make that clear. Yeah. But it is good that you bring up the idea of how do we even conceive of what an order, a spontaneous order of voluntary human interaction, how could we even wrap our minds around it? Because it's absolutely anathema to everything we've ever been presented in the world. And so how can we even envision that? And of course, they will give you the AI Terminator sort of blueprint for where things are going in order to keep people in the fear mindset and wary of various developments. So is there some way that we can envision a world of what this would actually look like? And yes, and I think, interestingly, science fiction tends to be that nexus of where you either get these dark apocalyptic visions of all these horrible things, but you could also get the other side of that. And one example of that is an excellent short story called And Then There Were None. It was an Eric Frank Russell story from 1951, and I have an edition of Film Literature and the New World Order, in which I have an audiobook reading of that story, and I have a presentation about that story. But that is a good example of, okay, regardless of how we get there, let's just imagine a society of truly individual sovereign human beings who understand and claim their sovereignty. The old canard that is always presented is, oh, if you had a nation of anarchists, you know, some other nation would just come in with their army and take them over and boom, game over, right? This is a refutation of that argument in a in a form that I think people can wrap their minds around. What would happen if a planet was being colonized by these space colonizers who are coming to, you know, come in and take this planet for themselves? But it's an entire planet of complete individuals who refuse to acknowledge any authority whatsoever. What would that look like? And this is an example of what that would look like. So there are ways we can wrap our minds around this, but I agree that the question of how we get from here to there is the question, right? In practical terms, because yes, I can imagine what a voluntary society looks like, but how do we get from here to there is an incredibly difficult question. One to which I do not have the answer. I don't think any individual human being has the answer, but it's something that we should be devoting our time, attention, and resources to coming up with an answer to before the AI, world coin, transhumanist, whatever nightmare does start coming into reality.
You mentioned earlier climate change, and we talk about transhumanism / eugenics, and we talk about world government, and the same people that are involved in pushes for these two concepts are also simultaneously pitching the fear-based climate debacle, and have been for a very long time. And Maurice Strong really kind of took it to a new level. Where do we go with we all understand that climate change is nonsense, and that you can buy a climate scientist just as easily as you can buy a COVID scientist, maybe even cheaper. But what's the end game for them? Is it to monetize carbon and tax people to death? Is it to use some sort of guilt to convince people to stop having children, or maybe even physically prevent them from having children under the guise of, you know, carbon dioxide and saving the planet and all of this? What's the most diabolical component of the carbon or of the global warming / climate change scam that you see?
Yes. Well, thank you for that, because yes, I did kind of leave that hanging out there. How is climate change a 20th century reformulation of the eugenics idea? And it does relate to it let's go with the darkest possible concept and motivation here, which is the depopulation concept. Not just depopulation itself, but actually inculcating a depopulationist mindset into the public to actually get the public to desire its own eradication, which, again, can you imagine teaching dogs or wolves or bears or any other species to actually desire the end of its own species, right? But apparently with humans, that can be done. And we have seen how this climate guilt nightmare trip that we've been inculcating into now generations of children has started to have an effect. And there are people who are voluntarily deciding, I'm not going to have children. I wouldn't want to bring them into this disaster that we're creating and all of that. That to me is absolutely the most frightening part of this. But I would say that also, speaking of technocracy, so if people go back to the original technocracy idea formulated by a charlatan named Howard Scott, but actually given scientific detail by M. King Hubbert of Hubbert's Peak fame, a.k.a. Peak Oil. Yes, he was a petroleum geologist who was a founding member of this technocracy idea and wrote the technocracy study course, which I cited, for example, in my Why Big Oil Conquered the World documentary. If people go and read that and read about the system they were creating, The key part of technocracy was the economic idea that they had to get rid of money. Money is this stupid, outdated concept as a way of trying to price things in the economy. No. What we need to do is we need to price things not in terms of money, dollars, or something. No, it's evaluated in terms of energy credits. So the technates, the mastermind galaxy brains who are going to be the experts running all of this, they will know. And keep in mind, this is coming in the 1930s in the midst of the absolute chaos of the Great Depression and, oh my God, capitalism has failed. This entire way of life is on its way out. People are casting around. They're looking at communism. They're looking at all these other ideas. One idea is technocracy, because it says, don't worry, guys, yes, the stupid boom-bust depression cycle of craziness, that's nonsense. That's absolute madness. We're going to perfectly balance inputs and outputs in the economy, so there will be no ups and downs and bumps and crashes and booms and all of that craziness. We're the experts who will know how to do that. And the way we will do that is we will calculate all of the energy inputs that go into creating what we need in society, all of the things that we want in society, and then the technate will then issue that amount of, they'll take that amount of energy and they will divvy it up as credits that they will give out to the population. And that will be, you will get your, you know, whatever it is, 10 joules of energy or whatever, and you will spend those at the store in return for goods, which will be valued in terms of the amount of energy inputs that went into creating that good. All right, so I get the concept, and I get what they're talking about. It was absolute insanity back in the 1930s to envision such a completely planned economy and how that would even function. But, you know, 2025, that's possible. We really could have these vast databases of every single item in the economy. One key question that might get overlooked there is, so who gets to decide exactly what items we need in the economy? And who gets to decide, you know, because I just like to take that to the absolute absurd extreme. And I did so in a recent a video I did called Now an Announcement from the Ministry of Toothbrushes, where the technate will decide exactly how many toothbrushes need to be produced in a given year, what size, what shape, what color, what style. And they will issue that and you will get your ministry-approved toothbrush, and you will like it, because that's the only one that you will get, because they have decided for you. And it's not just toothbrushes, it's literally everything. Pantyhose and boots and everything. They will decide what needs to be produced. So you see how it's kind of baked into the cake as part of an... They don't even talk about that side of it, really. It's just that, oh, of course, we know exactly what will need to be produced for every human being in the economy in a given year. We'll be able to calculate that, guys. You don't have to worry about it. Wait, what if I want to worry about it? What if I don't like the color of toothbrush you decide I need, or literally anything else? But, you know, that just gets lost in the weeds. But anyway, all of this relates back to the climate idea, because of course, what is one idea that has been floated on a number of occasions in recent years? Carbon credits, carbon rationing, literally taking and apportioning what goes into the economy, measuring it in terms of carbon dioxide, and then rationing that carbon credit. And they even, a couple of decades ago in the UK, there was even MPs that were talking about the idea of a carbon ration card. You would get a certain amount and you would be able to spend it. And once you're out of your carbon rations for the month, you can't buy anything more. I mean, this is the technocratic idea just rejiggered for this new climate change narrative. So it's all of a piece. Eugenics, climate change, technocracy, transhumanism, they're all of a piece and they're all wrapped around that mindset. Don't worry, guys, the experts will determine everything for you because they love you and they want to take care of you and everyone on Earth, as demonstrated by the whole of human history and all of those wonderful oligarchs that have always cared so much about the people underneath them, right? Yeah. No, put on your thinking cap for 2 seconds and you see right through it, but they never, ever want you to put on the thinking cap.
Oh, that's crazy. That'll never happen. As they roll out the MasterCard at the World Economic Forum that has carbon allotments baked into it. Now, of course, admittedly, it's early and maybe it's not working as they had dreamed up, but I can envision a scenario where you go, you know, it's, hey, it's big game day. You go to the store, you want to buy a bunch of steaks and burgers and hot dogs. You're having a bunch of people over to your house. You go to scan it. Your swipe your credit card through and they say, sir, you have exceeded your carbon allotment for the month. You can't be buying all this red meat. Are you crazy? You should know better than this. That's where they want to take us, right? Where they're arbitrarily measuring the amount of carbon dioxide that's allowable, setting a limit, selling, you get a certain amount. Anything under that, maybe you have a credit you can trade in the carbon markets, or if you're above it, you have to buy offsets to do that. See, it sounds to me like a new casino game that Goldman Sachs is going to run, is it not?
Yeah. Yes, in fact, yes. When you look into the history of carbon trading, carbon markets, and various types of weather futures and other crazy ideas. They have been forwarded not just by Goldman Sachs. Enron literally was starting the first carbon trading idea back in the 90s with the help of Al Gore, of course. So, yes, there is some financial pedigree to this. And yes, one aspect of this has to be seen, that this is a gigantic, I hesitate to even use the word financial because that doesn't quite grasp it. It is essentially a play for monopolization of the world's resources, literally the world. And that includes human resources, by the way, because that is the way the technocrats would see you. But yes, if there is anything good that's coming out of this crazy, chaotic liquefaction of societal relations that we were talking about earlier, it's that one thing that I think is that these hubristic would-be controllers of humanity generally do overstep their stomach exceeds their mouth, or whatever that phrase is. I think that's a French phrase. Anyway, they're not able to accomplish half of what they think they will be able to accomplish. And if I have hope, and I hope it is hope rather than hopium, I guess we will see, because maybe I had too much hope in humanity during the scandemic. But if I have hope, it is that when people start to really realize, start to really see the effects of these ideas that sound nice, and it costs me nothing to virtue signal and go, oh yes, I care about the planet, so I will happily not have children and live in my hovel and blah, blah, blah. But when it starts to really actually affect people's day-to-day lives, I think there starts to become pushback. And one example of this that I go back to is a report that was written by this group called UK Fires that involved researchers from, I believe it was Oxford and some other places, came out with this report a couple of years ago called Absolute Zero, in which they were arguing net zero is just this political shell game that they're playing where they're going to offset all their, you know, and carbon dioxide with carbon trading and all these. It's a sham, guys. It's a sham. Well, yes, it is a sham. But their solution was, no, we're not going to let that happen. Instead of net zero, we don't want that. We want absolute zero. We want to not have any carbon dioxide output in the economy. So how do we do this? And they go through in this report, and they put it in black and white, which is the crazy thing. But they're talking about, by the end of the decade, there will be no more commercial international flights. Airports will be closed down. Construction, the construction industry as we know it, concrete, all these other things, gone, done. We will have to stop until we can find other ways of doing it. International shipping, freight, cargo, until we can get a nuclear freight shipping line up and running. International shipping is done. I mean, essentially the end of civilization as we know it. And they're putting it down. Yes, by 2050, you know, we'll be back in the Stone Age. Yay. And I think these researchers probably really mean it. I think there are a lot of people, I think the middle management of this technocratic idea are probably, for the large part, true believers. And they are truly, shall we say, socially and cognitively impaired enough to not understand that what they're talking about is absolute insanity. And once people start to actually feel it, once people really start to feel it, they tend to push back. So, and couple that with, oh, well, now we need, you know, a bajillion, gajillion gigajoules of energy per second for this AI monstrosity we're creating. So, boop, all gone. Any concerns we had, get the coal fire plants up and running. We're going to start, Three Mile Island, let the Microsoft buy it out and start it up again. We're going 110% full tilt towards this. So if I take any satisfaction in anything, it's that I do not believe they will be able to push through this climate change narrative in the way that they were hoping, at least not without some significant pushback. And we're starting to see the beginning of what the pushback is as people start to realize, oh, wait, no, this really affects my actual day-to-day life. No, I didn't sign up for that. I just wanted a virtue signal.
Do you envision a scenario, maybe in the future, certainly not today, that the people pushing this fourth industrial revolution of transhumanism come, you know, inject you with mRNA technology and a variety of other substances over the next coming years, and to a point where at some point, legally, you become non-human. You become transhuman. And in doing so, now all of the human rights no longer apply to you. Is this a backdoor way of putting people into a new category legally?
It certainly is a possibility, isn't it? Especially given the patentability of organic life that came through the Diamond V. Chakrabarty decision of 1980 or 81, where they developed a new type of bacteria that would eat oil or something along those lines. And they were able to patent it, and it was upheld by the Supreme Court. Yep, you can patent life now. So life is now patentable. Take that for what it's worth. What does that mean? And we have seen the way, for example, Monsanto versus Percy Schmeiser, some, you know, Monsanto GMO engineered crop blows into your field and they discover it on your field. And now suddenly you owe Monsanto for this thing that blew into your field. So now, yeah, they start injecting you with stuff and hey, that's our patented thing that's in your system now. And you're now 10% owned by Pfizer. What? What happened? I don't know. I wouldn't dismiss it as an impossibility. I am wary again, because I think that, again, this is the type of thing that sounds good on paper, but when it starts to come into reality, I think there would be significant pushback on that. But really what this keeps coming back to for me is that, yes, there's all sorts of absolute crazy stuff that could be done if people go along with it. But once again, I really do think it ultimately rests with us. We really do have power in this system. And this is something I keep coming back to, because I know that the number one propaganda message throughout our entire lifetime has been, you are meaningless. You are nothing. You cannot fight this system. Nothing you do has an effect. Sometimes the steam valve, the release valve for that pent-up energy is, of course, the slave suggestion box. Every 4 years you can throw. And look, you got Trump in, and now everything's changing. You see, it does make a difference. So that's the release valve. But the overwhelming message is, it's not about you. You're nothing. You're just some little individual in this big, vast cosmic scheme of things. You mean nothing. You can do nothing. Whereas I think, no, what they are telling you is, please believe us. Believe our messaging. Here's this propaganda construct. We'll spend billions and billions of dollars just to get into the space between your ears, just so that we can make you believe that you're pitiful and powerless and can do nothing, so that you will go along. Oh, you know, what can I do? Oh, well, I guess I'm 10% owned by Pfizer now. Okay. You know, some judge gaveled it down, so now it's reality. Okay, whatever. No. Still, it really does rest with us. We still decide our reality. And yes, that reality is constrained by various financial and other forces that we do not control ourselves, but we do still control our minds, what we believe and the way we act in the world, and that is important. And the moment when I stop believing that is the moment when, okay, well, whatever, it's done, humanity's over. Why would I even be here talking? But I truly believe this from the bottom of my heart. We are important. What we say, what we think, what we do, what we believe actually matters, and they know this. That's why they spend so much time trying to make you believe various things. So I think all we have to do is reclaim our power. Easy for me to say, huh?
I'm always mindful that they can have a 10-step process towards tyranny, but if they can't get off of step three, then it doesn't really do them much good. Let's wrap up with this. What's in the future for Corbett Report? What are you working on? What's happening over there?
I am working on a lot. I am extremely busy right now. I'm working on various projects, documentary projects and others. There is a certain red thing on the desk behind me that I have not announced publicly yet, so I will not announce it here yet. But I'll just say, stay tuned, and you might find out what that red thing on that desk behind me is, and other such things besides. I have a lot of fun stuff planned for the coming year.
That's the great James Corbett, everyone. Go to CorbettReport.com, become a subscriber. They've got a great merch store over there, too. Get yourself something nice, show your support that way. If you want to connect with me, the best way to do that, macroaggressions.io. Please go to Activist Post and Natural Blaze to get your news. Thanks, everybody. Talk to you again soon. We'll be right back.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org. One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.